All right. Do you want to? I don't even remember who introed last time.
I did, and I hated it, and you're doing it okay. This time.
All right. Sure. Welcome back, everybody, to Mysterious Minis, the weekly mini podcast that brought to you by Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore about new events and new books coming out and things of that nature. One day I'll actually like write an official intro to this and we won't bumble through it every time, but I am too exhausted for that right now.
I like a little bit of struggle.
Yeah, I think that people know that, like, it's unstructured in a way that I think is distinctly different from what we do on the Thursday show, because it's just you and I being like, let's catch up on what's happening this week.
Literally.
Yeah, for real, though. So I guess we'll just, like, jump right into events, and then we can get to some new books and some new Pride recommendations.
Yes.
Yes. So, right off the bat, we have an event tonight with Gregory Benford and Larry Niven. They're signing their book Glorious, which is the third in their Bowl of Heaven series. That one is about... Actually, the description is super funny because it doesn't actually tell you anything about the plot, which is my favorite kind of description. It says, audacious astronauts encounter bizarre, sometimes deadly life forms and strange exotic cosmic phenomena, including miniature black holes, dense fields of interstellar plasma, powerful gravity emitters, and spectacularly massive space-based alien-built labyrinths.
Wow.
Great.
That is... Sure. Yeah.
Give me this.
I love that description so much.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like... I hate to use the word epic in such a callous way, but it reminds me of, like, the idea of, like, labyrinths and mysterious phenomena and... coming in contact with like alien life forms that are unrecognizable. There's something like mythological, like it feels like of a similar type to like the Odyssey, or like I think of the labyrinth in the end of Goblet of Fire, where they come in contact with like a bunch of different creatures over the course, like they're trying to navigate this maze, but there's these things that keep, these obstacles that keep presenting themselves.
No,
it feels
like that in a way.
Yeah. I'm always also a sucker for like labyrinth stories. I just find that particular fascinating. I don't, it's something that I've always been really interested in. I think like the Minotaur labyrinth is really cool. And then I do, like I said, the Harry Potter one, is like an interesting take on like that same sort of idea. Labyrinths are cool.
Labyrinths are cool.
So yeah, we're having Gregory Benford and Larry Niven both, on our Facebook Live. Of course, that one is starting at 7 o'clock tonight. So you can find the link in the description. And then coming up in just a couple days, actually not till the end of the week, on Saturday, we're having a virtual event with Kim Harrison. She's going to be joining us at 2 o'clock to discuss her new book, American Demon, which is also out new today.
I'm really excited about that one. I think that is the cover. Super captivating. It's got a cute lady on the front. It's got lots of like bright color, you know, that
it's
draws
also
me in.
14 in this series.
Yeah. And I mean, just, I haven't read the series, but I mean, just from the description alone in our event calendar, like I might have to pick it up. Like it sounds very much like my jam.
Yeah, totally. I think she's come to the store and done stuff with us a bunch. So
yeah,
this will be an exciting one. That one's at 2 o'clock. And then on Monday. Make sure I have that right.
Yes, it's Monday.
Next Monday, the 22nd, we're having PC and Kristen Cast talking about their new book Found, which I'm pretty sure actually comes out in July. So we're doing pre-orders for those. I think we're doing signed ones. As far as I'm aware, they're signing stock for the store that we're going to be shipping to people. So if you want a signed copy of this book,
if you want
a personalized copy, let us know in the comment field when you order it on the website.
Exactly.
Those orders are due by June 29th to guarantee yourself a signed and personalized copy. So go ahead and do that as soon as possible. And that event is at, I think, also 7, right?
Yeah, standard.
Yeah, 7 o'clock on Monday the 22nd. So quiet week this week, aside from, again, you know, we do D&D on Sundays. That is just like a recurring thing at this point, which has been fun. But just those three events, Greg Benford and Larry Niven on Tuesday tonight, Kim Harrison on Saturday, and then the casts on next Monday.
I think that's a great lineup. And it's a little quiet, like you said, but I mean, it's fun.
Totally. And you know, what's been really good is like, I think that our turnaround for the YouTube has been really, really good lately because I missed the first part of the event with EK Johnston last Friday and then was able to catch that on YouTube like the next day. I think it's already up there, so people can still go back and check that out, which was really cool. Such a fan.
I love being able to go back and watch them because, I mean, like, you know, we don't always have the privilege to be able to tune into every event as much as we would like to. So I think it's great Nick works so hard to get them up there so fast.
Yeah, I'm really appreciative of the work that he was doing. I think especially that one started at 5 instead of 7. So I was like still doing work stuff.
Yeah.
Had it open, but was like only like halfway paying attention versus like being able to engage with the chat and like participate when those events are happening.
Yeah, I mean, like if I can't give it 100% of my focus, like I don't want to just tune in and end up like tuning out because I'm doing other stuff.
Totally. So you know, again, if you miss any of the ones that are coming up this week, or if you've missed any ones in the past few weeks that you're interested in, the YouTube has been linked in the description for every episode since it went live. So y'all can always go and click the link in the description and check those out there.
Yes.
Okay. Easy week with events.
Do we want to move on to new books?
Yeah. I chatted about the Benford and Harrison, so I'll let you do a couple because I've only got one more to talk about this week.
All right. So out today we have The Half-Sister by Sandy Jones. It is described as a domestic suspense novel. Basically it is about this, how do I say this? It's about two sisters learning that they have a half sister that they never knew about, like right after their father dies.
Yeah.
Like she just sort of shows up at their door, you know, she has the positive DNA test with her. So like, there's no, you know, sort of what's going on, like confusion, like she has the proof. And
yeah,
I'm really excited. I love
like this are always really stressful to me.
Why? Because it feels like it could like really happen.
Yeah, like because stuff like this really happens just like all the time.
I mean, to be fair, Gary, not to freak you out, but a lot of like terrible fictionalized like horror and true crime, you know, stuff
I know
does really happen.
I know a lot of that stuff. I think that, you know, I mean, we talked about it when we had our interview with Mallory a few weeks ago, but the problem that I have, the hardest horror stuff for me to get into is the stuff that is like the most contemporary, the like this stuff does happen, like,
oh absolutely. I mean, like
that
I'm
unsettles
still...
me to a point that I ugh. It's rough.
I can't remember. I think it's called Hush. That I talked about in the episode with Mallory. That film,
I love,
wonderfully
Hush,
done,
but terrifying.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Gosh, good stuff.
So we also have a new book from Max Brooks. I'm sure you recognize his name from World War Z. This book is called Devolution. Devolution. I'm not. I feel like
I googled it and Google told me it's Devolution.
All right, well then it's Devolution. Basically, it is about, you know, this sort of like investigative thriller about Bigfoot being real.
Yeah.
And it's like a survival story, it's a horror story, it's a scientific journey, sort of like discussing the like boundaries between truth and fiction, as it puts it. And I think that's great because I want to believe in like Mothman and other cryptids.
Oh, totally.
And
Well, I think that's what Max Brooks does so interestingly, is like, much like World War Z was a collection of letters and accounts and interviews with people that are experiencing the fallout of like the zombie apocalypse. This one takes letters from someone who, I guess, had like experienced like a massacre at the hands of, or like some conspiracy that's being unraveled. So you have like this girl's documentation, and then the my understanding, the way that the description reads it, is that it's Max Brooks's like research into her letters.
Yeah.
And like expounding on like what the truth of the situation might be based on the context of her story, which I think is fascinating. I'm such a fan of like people who can juggle multiple like viewpoints within a story, especially when they're like completely different kinds of genre.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. I love this sort of stuff.
Yeah. So I'm gonna try and get my hands on this one. I'm pretty sure I had, or we had, some advanced copies come into the store. I don't remember if I brought one home. I'll have to go looking through my box.
Yeah, it was not there. It was not there this weekend when I was picking up a bunch of arcs.
I might have a copy of it somewhere. I'll go digging and maybe I'll read that one.
All I know is this one definitely appeals to me, because I'm very much that person that's like, I want to believe that like supernatural stuff is real.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, it would be sick as hell if like vampires were real and ghosts and like other shit like that. So
I won't even lie. I spent so many nights like doing that Wikipedia deep dive on like cryptids.
Oh, I love doing that.
Just stuff like that. Yeah, just digging deeper and deeper. And being like, this is all terrifying.
All right. Do you want me to do my last one that I got, and then you go, or do you want to tell me what you got?
The one I've got is a young adult called The Kinder Poison by Natalie May.
Oh, we're not supposed to be talking about young adults. We're supposed to be talking about young adult novels, Gary.
Oh, what are you? Whatever. People know what I mean. People know what I mean.
This is what the people come for. Me being a jerk.
Great.
But very
I'm glad
delightful.
That people enjoy it.
I hope they do. I hope people don't think I'm mean.
No, I don't think you're mean. So I think it's fine. No one's been like, stop being mean to Gary.
And they never will.
This one is a fantasy adventure that follows a teenage girl chosen to be a human sacrifice in a deadly game between three heirs who will do anything for the crown.
I gotta tell you, I was not expecting that.
Yikes. I know, right? It says it's perfect for fans of authors like Victoria Aveyard and Holly Black. So this definitely feels like it's going to have like, yeah, like an sort of epic fantasy with like that I don't even want to call it a twinge of darkness. It's dark. Their stuff is dark usually.
Yeah.
Which I'm excited about. I'm always fascinated when books like these come out and just hearing the like discourse about them, because so many of our staff read a lot of the like dark young adult fantasy that comes out.
Oh yeah.
So like, while this one was not on my radar until we started putting together the list for today, I'm sure that at least one other person at the store has already read it.
I'm willing to bet Victoria.
Yeah, probably. So we'll dig into this one, but this sounds exciting. Again, out today. Links in the description.
And the last book that I have for you guys before we get into the Pride Month recommendations is You Say It First by Katie Cotugno. It is a YA romance novel, as far as I understand it. This one really caught my eye. Like, obviously, I love YA novels. I love a good YA romance novel, because I think it's just like, there's something like fun about young people being in love. It makes me feel young.
Aw.
But basically, it's about two, you know, young folks who accidentally become involved with one another after a voter registration call. So basically, like, this girl Meg is the one that is like calling to like make sure that people are registered to vote. she works for a voter registration call center in Philadelphia and accidentally ends up connected to someone in Ohio. And his name is Colby, and he's not into it. He, you know, he's pissed off. He just had like a family tragedy happen. He hates his job. All of those like stereotypical YA things that I love. And when I say stereotypical, I don't mean that as a bad thing.
Sure.
I love tropes.
Oh, yeah.
He's definitely...
Well, we talked about the like long distance communication, like not even friends to like, or enemies to lovers or whatever, but just like the long distance, like people that come from different walks of life, realizing that they have a commonality and falling for each other over the course of their communications. Like a couple weeks ago with, what was that book about? It was that mystery title from like 2 weeks ago.
I can't remember, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Anyways, I don't have it in front of me. This is absolutely that. And like the reason I say that it's like fun, tropey stuff is because like this girl, Meg, who's working for the call center, she's like, you know, got her whole life planned out. She's going to Cornell in the fall with her best friend, and she's doing this, you know, to raise awareness or whatever. And like Colby seems like he's very much that like tough boy from a small town who's just like broody and sad.
Oh yeah. And,
like, it even says that like the last thing he has time for is some privileged rich girl preaching to him about the sanctity of political process.
Oh boy.
And I think that's hilarious.
That's really funny.
And so, you know, one thing leads to another and they end up connecting again, and just it seems like it's going to be a very intricate, multi-layered romance. I'm looking forward to reading it.
Sounds cute.
I love a good cute romance book.
Yeah,
for teens.
I could have probably read more. I think this has come up. I was a very like angry teen. I didn't read a lot of like romance.
Which is just so weird. Guys, I don't know if you can tell this from listening to Gary on the show and like our back and forth, but Gary is like one of the sweetest people I've ever met. Very soft boy. Can't ever imagine you being like, "F the system." Oh, yeah, well, there's my one.
Very grumpy. I don't know. We moved a lot and I hated that. I went to a bunch of different schools. I was the oldest of five and the only boy.
Wait, how many times did you move?
Jesus. Becca, I think I've moved like 13 or 14 times in my life.
Oh my God. I think that I'm pretty close. I think I'm at like 9.
Lived in like 7 or 8 different states. I went to 4 different high schools. I went to a different high school every year. It was a lot. I was very angry.
I was counting on my hand. Yeah, I think I'm at like 9 or 10.
We moved a bunch when I was like really little, so I don't necessarily count those, but of what I remember...
Hey, they still count. It still happened.
Yeah, but I couldn't tell you, like, I know that we lived in Delaware for a short amount of time, but I don't, I hardly remember it. I think I remember, like, the house and that we had a pond in the backyard.
Oh, I love a good pond.
Yeah, it froze over in the winter, and I was very sad about all the fish.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I was, like, 5 or 6 at that point, you know? I didn't really know.
This feels so intimate. Like, our listeners are learning about us, learning about our common ground. About us.
Yeah. So it was mostly up and down the East Coast, like Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Delaware. I think we were in Maryland for a brief amount of time.
Huh.
Yeah. And then we moved to Texas, and then we moved here.
There you go.
Yeah.
And the rest is history.
Yeah, I've been in California longer than I've been anywhere.
I feel that. I was in Arizona longer than anywhere else.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Well, you're here now.
I am. And I'm not going back.
I get that.
All right, guys. Enough about us. I'm going to teach you about some other stuff. I'm going to teach you about some LGBTQIA+ horror recommendations. I actually had like a kind of hard time putting this list together. Not because there is a lack of queer horror out there, but just because I realized how little queer horror I read that didn't feel like exploitive in one way or another, or like mishandled. So. Sure. This list is considerably shorter, and so my descriptions will also be shorter, but this is not a reflection of what is out there. There's a lot of good queer horror out there. I'm just a terrible person and haven't read nearly as much as I thought I had up until this point. We're going to start super classic. I know most of you know it. If you don't know it from the book, you probably know it from the movie. I'm talking, of course, about Interview with a Vampire by Anne Rice. Basically,
I love this book.
Yeah, it's so good.
I've read so many of the Vampire Chronicles books, and they're so fun.
Yeah, so like Gary said, it is from...
that is an icon.
Shut up, Gary!
I'm sorry!
So like Gary already said, it is from the Vampire Chronicles series. This book is from 1976. It's based off of a short story that Anne Rice wrote in the late 60s and turned into a novel about the vampire Louis and Lestat. It's from Louis's point of view, basically, most of the time, I would say. And it's just, you know, him telling his life to a reporter. And he doesn't really hold back on it. And I really like this book because, I mean, when you look up this book, the thing that people also ask on Google are Louis and Lestat lovers? Because this was possibly one of my earliest run-ins with like a good homoerotic undertone book. And I mean, like, I will say this too, like, I personally love the movie. I know it's maybe not very good, but
sure,
it is the only time in my entire life that I've thought Tom Cruise was attractive. And though, you know, I do have to say I prefer the guy that played Lestat in Queen of the Damned.
Okay, that's fair.
I think he's way, way hotter. But yeah, I really love this book. I think it's a great read. It is quite thick. I will, you know, let you know. Like, Anne Rice does not hold back when it comes to descriptions and really, like, kind of prolonging things. But I think that it is a first read for a lot of queer alternative people, especially kids that went through their goth phase early on. I think I read this book for the first time when I was like 12.
I think I was in high school.
Yeah, I think I was 12, and I very much related to Claudia being like super in love with and also hating both Louis and Lestat, because, you know, like, it would suck to be a forever child. I feel like no one ever really gets into that, but that...
What a nightmare.
Yeah, I really feel for her.
Yeah.
So that's all I have to say about that, just because I feel like most people are familiar with... If they aren't familiar with Interview with the Vampire, they're familiar with Anne Rice's work, especially if they're interested in, like, queer-centric horror.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you haven't read it, I recommend it. It's not, like, a do-or-die, but I personally love the book. I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, those books are incredibly, like, romantic, regardless of the fact that they're not necessarily about romance.
Oh, but, yeah.
Like, the intimacy of, like, turning someone and just, like, the relationships between vampires is all incredibly erotic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I can't imagine, like, I mean, even if we're talking about, like, the relationship between, like, you know, God, I completely blanked on the word. The familiar of a vampire.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, I mean, like, all of these dynamics and relationships between, like, vampires and other vampires, vampires and humans, what have you, always have this very, like, romantic and erotic undertone to them, because, like, it's such a very intimate thing. Like, it's literally, like, giving the gift of eternal life. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't go, it's I don't know how many other, I haven't read a ton of vampire fiction, but, like, it's not a one-way process.
Yeah,
get bitten by a vampire and you turn. Like, you each drink each other's blood. It's an exchange.
So hot.
Yeah, it's great. Those books are really good.
It's influenced the taste of a lot of people.
I need to read the new ones.
Yeah, I haven't read the new ones either. Yeah,
I need to read the newer ones. The Prince Lestat books are supposed to be really good as well, but...
Maybe we can read them as a small book club.
Oh boy. We should do that. That'd be fun. I'd be down for that.
The next book I want to recommend is another from what I consider to be kind of a staple member of the horror community. You're probably familiar with him from his work on Hellraiser. Yeah. But I want to recommend The Books of Blood. I believe it's a 3 books series. And it's not like a series. It's a series of short stories. The Books of Blood by Clive Barker. Basically, like, the most profound thing about this series of stories is, like, how popular it's become. Because
yeah.
It was super rough, raunchy, like, erotic, extremely violent, gory, fictional stories. Like, something I would really compare it to is, like how Junji Ito has gotten a following. I mean, like, in Barker's stories, like, people were ripping their skin off and, like, ripping bodies in half. And, like, yikes. There was just this, like, I mean, it's very much, like, it's very much the feeling you get from, like, Hellraiser of, like,
sure,
this yeah. very, like, erotic play between pain and pleasure and violence and sexuality. And I really like it. Like, something that I find is an issue with a lot of the way that queer people are treated in modern horror is they're either there as a prop for violence or they're extra shielded because, like, people don't want to be seen as, like, hurting a queer character in fiction sure. for homophobic reasons or whatever. But, like, you know, Clive is queer. And so I just enjoyed that he's never been afraid in any of the work he's done yeah. to be honest about what his vision was and to just, like, take it way over the edge. And, like, everything that I've ever encountered that he's created has made me, like, sit and, like, think for at least a couple hours after, like, just, like, whoa.
That's when you know something's good is when you finish it and you feel, like, transformed by it in some way.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Let's see. I'm going to move on to some more modern recommendations. Not that Clive isn't modern, but, you know, like, those books are a little old now. I want to recommend to you guys When I Arrived at the Castle by Emily Carroll.
I think this one came up, I think, during our Mallory interview.
It did.
I've linked it before. Okay.
Absolutely.
I was like, I recognize this title, and I pulled it up, and I was like, oh, I've seen this book.
This book is fantastic. It's a super short read. I mean, like, I just read through it again right before we recorded because, like, it takes, like, 15 minutes to read. I read it with my lunch. I love this book because, again, like, there's obvious, prominent lesbian, like, tension happening. Like, this, yeah. like, very, like, it's very violent. It's very, like, gory. The story is a little over the place, but, like, in a good way. Like, I like when a horror story is disorienting. You know, it's got that mild nudity, which is great. But I really love Emily Carroll's work. Like, all of her work is super fantastic. She's a fantastic horror creator between the stories and the illustrations. I mean, I feel like I'll always be recommending her work because I don't feel like she gets enough credit for the work she does. It's very good. And I mean,
that's what we're here for.
Yeah, exactly. I'm, like, losing my train of thought because I'm just, like, getting worked up. I'm like, you know,
just like, oh, this is so good.
Her work is really good and you should read it.
Do it. Read it.
And then I'm just going to say this, like, very briefly because I haven't read this particular comic that we're going to be linking to for the first volume of it. But, I mean, really, you can't go wrong with any Constantine, the Hellblazer comics. We have the 30th anniversary full collection up. It's a bit pricey, I won't lie. But if you're looking for something more like, I don't know, budget for a new book to try out, if you don't know much about Constantine, we also are going to be linking to the first volume of the 2016 series. I really like Constantine. You know, he had a movie, whatever. Yeah. But he's been on Legends of Tomorrow. I haven't personally been watching it, but I have seen scenes that he's in, and he seems great.
he had his own show that got canceled, I think, before he started appearing on Legends of Tomorrow, which is, it's nice that they're like still, they're still keeping this actor around and like this same character.
Right.
Despite
I feel
the
like
fact that his own show didn't survive.
I feel very much, like, betrayed that we got Kristen Ritter as...
Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones, thank you. I was focusing so hard on remembering Kristen Ritter's actual name that I forgot what I was talking about. But, like, you know, like, we got Kristen Ritter as Jessica Jones, and, like, we got, like... I can't remember the actor's name that plays Luke Cage, but I really like him as Luke Cage. And, like, now they've canceled all those, and... I'm pretty sure we won't be seeing those characters anymore.
Yeah, I'm really bummed. Sucks. I think that the Netflix Marvel stuff is all really good. They've had their low points. I don't think the first season of Iron Fist was like great, but I didn't dislike it.
I don't want to talk
about it. And seeing how it all comes
Fist.
Together, seeing how all the stuff comes together, like when they have like Defenders or when the characters like cross over into each other's shows, like I love that stuff.
Absolutely. I'm gonna push in my non-controversial opinion that Iron Fist is a dumb character.
Yeah,
he's a weird white guy with an Asian fetish.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. They had been there's like all sorts of problems with the casting of that and how they had an opportunity to do better and didn't. I'm also really disappointed that we don't see any of the stuff that happens in I don't know what the name of the place he comes from. Kunlun.
Yeah.
Because he's already gone by the time he gets there. Spoilers for Iron Fist, I guess.
We've gotten way off track. I didn't even mention that the reason I'm recommending Constantine is because Constantine is a spooky bisexual.
Yeah.
That deals with spooky stuff. And that's great. Like, I don't feel like I need to say more. You should be sold.
Yeah, check out Constantine.
And then I have one last recommendation. Let's see if we can get through it.
Okay.
It is called Safe Sex. I believe the title is SFSX, just for, like, easier publishing reasons.
Sure.
And it is by Tina Horn. And I just pulled this description right from the I believe it's Image that published it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right from the Image website, because I think that it is so eloquent. It says it's a social thriller about sex, love, and torture that reads like Sex Criminals in Gilead crossed with Ocean's 8 with a Sunstone twist. And I don't know.
Incredible.
I don't know if you're familiar with Sunstone, but it is like a very good, like, kinky lesbian comic series.
Okay.
We can link to it below. I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the guy's name that does it. He also just did the Harleen book. And he has a very beautiful name. I know I'm going to pronounce it wrong, and I don't want to do that because I really admire his work, and that would be very embarrassing.
Sure.
But yeah, the creator of this comic, well, the writer, excuse me, was on a queer horror panel at FlameCon a couple years ago talking about this. Mm. And I do just want to specify for you guys, if you're interested in this, the book that we are linking to, it's because this is the first volume, and this is a book that just started in fall of last year, I want to say. It was either summer or fall of last year. This is a pre-order. It will be out by the end of July. But yeah, so the first volume is not necessarily available this second, but I do recommend doing the pre-order because... Is that a plane?
Yeah, it is so loud outside my apartment. I'm sorry.
I was like, holy shit, that's really loud.
I know. I muted my mic because the garbage truck came. And then as soon as it left, I turned my mic on and then an airplane flew over.
You know what it sounded like? It sounded like when you go to a concert and they don't have the microphone hooked up correctly. And so like it makes that feedback sound. Like it sounded more like that low hum feedback.
So yeah, the airfield right by me is like one that has a bunch of like smaller planes, little single person, two seater planes.
Oh.
So sometimes you'll hear them come over and you can like hear the propellers and everything. And it's like wild.
God, what anyway. What was I saying?
You're talking about safe sex.
Yeah. So I think that this comic is great. It's very like queer positive, very kink positive. And yeah, I really recommend picking it up because it's about a group of queer sex workers that work in an underground club and like fight the bureaucracy of police. Like,
that sounds incredible. Yes, please.
Yeah. So I can't recommend it enough. I can't recommend all of these enough. Like, I love queer horror and yeah. I need to read more of it. So I know that everyone else needs to read more of it too. And that's all I got.
Quick one this week. I feel good. All right. I guess that's it. What are you reading right now, Becca?
Oh, I'm actually reading something that some people would consider part of the horror list, but I'm saving for the sci-fi list because I think it leans more towards that. I'm reading Gideon the Ninth by Tamsin Muir. It was listed a couple places as like a good sci-fi horror book, but I mean,
I think we shelve it in sci-fi.
Yeah, I personally would recommend it as a sci-fi book. So we'll talk about that next week, I believe.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I should start that one. That's another one that's been on my shelf taunting me for a long time.
It's lesbian necromancers. What more do you need?
I know.
Gary, when I tell you to read a book, read it.
I'm going to continue to say, like, I've been really bad at actually, like, keeping up with stuff and finishing books lately.
I've been half reading books, which is a terrible habit of mine. Yeah, so I can't even.
I've been doing two.
Like, I've been avoiding this Poe Dameron arc for a while now, and I don't know why, because I really love it.
Yeah, I haven't even started it yet.
I just keep getting stressed out. I don't know. Now that home and work are the same place, like, I always feel like I could be doing something more, like, efficient with my time.
Yeah.
And then I end up just sitting on my phone for hours, like, stressing about how I should be doing something more efficient.
100%. I am with you. I haven't finished anything that I've been reading lately, so I don't have anything to like wrap up. I'm still reading Trigger Mortis by Anthony Horowitz. I don't know why I spaced on his name.
It's okay. Gary and I would like to formally apologize for all of the awkward pauses and forgetting of names and what we're talking about.
I try to cut them out so it's not as noticeable.
You know what? It's fine. Okay. Let the people know. There's a lot going on in the world right now, and I have every reason to be tired and dumb.
I did start reading. Do RPG books count?
I don't know. Does fan fiction count? That seems to be the only thing I'm finishing these days.
I started reading the book for a game called Blades in the Dark, which is part of a, there's a game website, an indie game website, itch.io, that's been doing a, the bundle for racial equality.
Did you buy
like
it?
Yeah, it's $5 and it's like 1700 games and things.
Oh, but I think it ends today though. I don't think I think it ended yesterday. Excuse me. So the folks aren't going to be able to.
That's a shame. Oh. But I'm reading the RPG textbook for Blades in the Dark, which is a fantasy tabletop role-playing game by a guy named John Harper.
I know John Harper.
It's so good. I've listened to, they've played this game a couple times on Friends at the Table, which I've brought up in the past. And so I'm like reading through it because I think it'd be fun to play a game outside of the D&D system.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's something that Dave and I have been talking about lately. We should talk after this.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's chat. But so I've been reading that. I don't know. I guess there's probably hardcover copies available somewhere. I'll go looking for that. And if I can link it, I'll link it below. So that's all I've been reading.
All right. Well, you know what? We're reading something and that's all that matters.
Making some progress.
I'm not here to be judged. Is that another airplane?
Yeah.
Jeez. Popular.
I guess. They're not coming to see me.
I meant the planes are popular. Oh, you're popular, Gary. I think
so. Where can people find you, Becca?
Nowhere. No, I'm just kidding. They can find me on Twitter at Becca Bean, B-E-E-A-N. And you can also find me on Instagram, Becca B, B-E-E underscore.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter at the Gary Roby, R-O-B-Y for Roby, if you haven't figured that one yet. I've still just been retweeting stuff and sharing resources there more than anything else.
I've been sharing some commissions I'm doing. If you follow me on Instagram, I chopped all of my hair off and shaved the sides of my head. So,
looks great.
Thank you.
I think it's dope. You can, of course, find the show at Mist Galaxy Books on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us on YouTube. The link will be in the description below. You can shop on our website at mistgalaxybooks.com. All of the events and books that we brought up today will also be in the description.
Gary, how do they get a hold of us?
You can email us at podcast@mistgalaxy.com. Send us your questions. Send us any suggestions for stuff you want to hear us talk about. Ask us for recommendations. Those are one of our favorite things to do, is like recommend books to people. That's why we're booksellers, right? So you can always do that.
That's why you're a bookseller?
Part of it is because I like talking about books to people.
I won't lie to you. I'm a bookseller so that I can get invited to the Star Wars celebration, and I'm pretty bummed it got canceled.
Pushed back to 2022.
That's not why I'm a bookseller, but I mean... Am I going to say that I don't want to meet Adam Driver accidentally? Like, come on.
I hear that. I didn't know... I mean, I don't know. I was like that kid growing up that was like, I want to work in a bookstore. And didn't really know anything about like how the industry of books worked or going to conventions.
I feel like that's a similar thread for a lot of us.
Yeah, I think so too. It's just like, I like fiction.
You know what we're forgetting?
We're
forgetting to thank our dear friend Austin Farmer for the use of our theme music. It's cut from Kill the Farm Boy off of his album Bookshelf Symphony Orchestra. As always, the link to that on Spotify is down below, so please go give it a listen.
Yeah, absolutely. Support Austin's stuff. I think that's it.
I think that's everything.
All right. Well, we'll see you again soon in a galaxy not so far away.
Oh, you did it!
I did it!
Woo! Goodbye!
Bye, everyone.